welcome back to IPV and Me. Once again, it's been a while, but we're back. I have recorded several different intros to this episode over the last couple of months, and then things have happened and I've not gotten around to recording the full episode, and then I'm just coming back and redoing the intro every single time. So that's not been great. I've been sick on and off for about 2 months now. I've had this like horrible cough, which I still have, but it's kind of going up, but I could not record anything because every time I, like, if I said more than two sentences, I would just have a coughing fit. I'm probably even still going to struggle through this, to be honest. But we're going to try our best anyway. I hope you guys are doing good. Thanks for your patience. Thanks for reaching out to me over the last few months and checking in. I appreciate that. I think it was November the last time I had an episode out. My busy season is always that, like, kind of late October into January season. So I just never have time anyway, but I didn't quite think it was going to be this long. I definitely have a little bit of seasonal depression too. I think New York weather has just been, like, we've had very mild winters the last few years, and then this year has just been an onslaught of, like, cold, cloudiness, snowing, freezing, windy. Like, my skin is dry, my lips are dry, my hair is dry. I just need some warm sun on my face ASAP. I'm actually, not that I'm going to get any sun there, but I'm thinking I'm going to book a last minute trip home to Ireland probably sometime this week, and probably hopefully go in the next few weeks. I need a little bit of, like, I get to that point every year where I'm like, I need a little break from my life, a little break from New York, and just get some fresh air and home comfort. So I'm probably going to do that in the next few weeks, hopefully. I have, however, been working on episodes. I've so many researched, written up, edited, ready to go. It's just the recording part that's been, like, particularly difficult. And I've had some other stuff going on behind the scenes in relation to the podcast. I did an interview with an online publication recently, which I'm going to link in the episode notes or the bio or whatever, and you can read that if you wish. I had it on my social, so you may have seen it already. But I was very excited when they reached out to me. And you know, it's always great to be given a voice to talk about these things. So that was very enjoyable. And as for anything else that's been going on, honestly, not really a whole lot. Like I said, I've just been working and going home because it's just been too much. I have some stuff coming up in the spring time. I have a few concerts. Got my Beyonce Cowboy Carter tickets. You know, I was on that right away. So excited. I think I've been to every single tour of hers apart from two of them, which there was reasons why I couldn't attend. But it's just always the highlight of the year whenever it comes around. I didn't quite think it was going to be so soon after Renaissance, but I'm very excited. I already have my outfit planned and everything. Like, it's an exciting time. If you're a Beyonce fan, let me know, because I love hearing from my other Beehive members. I think that's kind of it, basically. Just been, like, watching TV, reading a lot of books, going to work, trying to get out and, like, see my friends for various, like, lunches and things like that. But I think we're all just in that same boat of just like, oh, I just wanted to be springtime. I'm gonna leave it at that and make it a short little intro because I just want to get down to the episode and just get on with it. But thanks again for your patience. Thanks for reaching out to me and still you know, being there and looking for new episodes and all the rest of it, because I really do appreciate that. And I know that it's very sporadic when I release these episodes. I try my best to keep on top of it, but just know there's always work going on behind the scenes. I'm never not working on the podcast. It's just the recording part sometimes can take a while for various reasons, and sometimes I'm just not very motivated to record, because it's one thing researching the episodes, but like if I'm not in that place of mind where I want to record, you know, like it's hard for me to do that, because I can't just be like going through the motions and like faking it, kind of like I want to actually have a genuine you know, voice when I'm talking about these women's stories, who like, it's so important, they're too important to not put my full energy into. So thanks once again. Once again, all the links are in the bio, and let's get on with it. So the case I'm going to speak about today was a really well-known case in Ireland in the last couple of years, and the one of the first cases I think I've heard of where coercive control was a part of it. And it's, I think it changed a lot of things in Ireland in particular, and I think it'll change a lot of people's opinions on abuse and understanding of what coercive control is. And the lady whose story I'm telling, she waived her right to anonymity in order to be able to tell her story and raise awareness. And she was firstly involved in a documentary called Taking Back Control for RTE. And then she just came out last year with her book, which is what I read for this episode and what is gonna, the story is gonna be based on today. And I'm gonna leave a link for the book in my bio as per usual. Also, just be aware, there's a lot of Irish slang in this story, and I'll explain as much of it as I can when I go along. Sometimes, because it comes so natural to me, I forget that there's people listening from other parts of the world that probably don't know what I'm saying. So I'm going to try my best to like remember in the moment what it is and point it out to you guys. But anyways, today's story is the story of Nicola Haney. So another thing to note about this episode is that for her book, Nicola changed most of the names involved apart from her own name and her abuser's name. So everybody else likely has a different name. So just to be aware of that as we go on. So Nicola Haney was born and raised in North Circular Road, Dublin City, Ireland, along with her four brothers, John, Liam, Ross and Justin, and five sisters, Sarah, Courtney, Laura, Isabel and Natalie. So a very big family. And they were a very close family. Nicola left school to become a hairdresser, inspired by her older sister, Laura, who loved her job and how much fun she had every day with her co-workers and clients. It ended up being a great decision, as she too loved the job and did well, buying her own apartment and her dream car, which was a white convertible Audi. She loved her independence and freedom. She felt she was still too young to settle down and just wanted to live her life how she wanted. After about 20 years in the industry, Nicola started to feel aches in her neck and hip that she put down to being on her feet every day. She did the usual things like try different shoes, a better bra, but nothing worked. Then she also started developing a cough. She had blood tests done at the doctor's, but they came back clear, and the doctor told her to get more exercise in and drink more water. These, however, were things that she had already been doing, and doing more than enough of, she felt like. She continued to feel unwell and said that at 36, she felt more like an 80-year-old. Her sister Courtney thought she needed a break from work, and her friend Niamh had always thought she would love Thailand, as she herself had travelled there the year before. So Nicola booked a month off work and away she went. She really enjoyed Thailand. She loved the bustling way of life, the food, the sing-song language, and she learned things about herself that she never knew before. But despite getting enough sleep and being in the sun, she didn't feel any better and her cough was getting worse. The doctor in Thailand told her she had pneumonia and would feel better after some medication, but again, this didn't help. Then one day, she discovered a lump in her breast. She was terrified, and her sister tried to reassure her that lumps were common with pneumonia, but still she decided to cut her holiday short and came home to Ireland. In hospital, she was told she had cancer in her breast, which had spread to her liver, spine and hips, and it was stage 4 terminal. Now, again, thinking about like all those times that she went to the doctor and was told it was different things, various things, they couldn't find anything wrong with her. Like, you know your own body and you know yourself when something is wrong, and it's not just, you know, tiredness at work, not drinking enough water, things like that. And, you know, always, always, always get a second opinion. You know, push your doctor. If you don't feel right, you know yourself. Like, yes, they know the ins and outs of things and all of that, and they've studied it, but they don't know what your own body feels like, what feels right for you, what feels wrong for you. Nicola couldn't seem to take in the news and asked her doctor when she would be having surgery. He told her at this stage they could only make her comfortable and do some chemotherapy to give a small extension to her life. Not taking it in yet, she asked if she could freeze her legs, her eggs. The doctor gave her a sympathetic look and said, "Nicola, you will not be here to have a baby." Imagine here, I can't even imagine hearing that. At 36, it's insane. Her sister Laura pleaded with him, "You're not going to do anything. You're not even going to treat her." Then he said he needed to make himself clear that of the five people here in his office, only one of them knew how and roughly when they would die. Nicola was terrified. She thought about her friend Ashley's wedding in Ibiza next year and how she would never see her get married. She wondered what she had done for God to do this to her. She had never been a bride or had a child. What was all of her hard work even for? She had nightmares of her own funeral. She just wanted it to be over, and she lay in bed for weeks waiting for death. When she saw the pain in her friends and family's eyes, however, she knew she had to snap out of that way of thinking. She wanted to live. So she turned to God for a miracle. She prayed to him and her late grandmother to help her. Her friend Niamh told her about an article she had read promising the relief from cancer through a healthy diet. She heard about THC and other natural remedies. She would stop eating meat and dairy completely. She also found out about juicing and roped her family and friends in to help her with the grueling schedule needed to juice. All were more than willing to help. She knew one of them had to work. Even if they didn't, the hope it gave her was worth it. I can really understand that. I feel like hope is such a strong thing, and hope gives you a positive mindset. And I really feel like that makes a huge difference in our health. Having cancer became a full-time job for her. She had always loved her freedom, but now she felt trapped by the disease and the constant pain, the chemo making her feel even worse. She had blisters in her mouth, her skin burned, and sounds and light aggravated her. She tried homeopathy and learned about meditation and healing from the inside. Her sister Courtney's sister-in-law had a strange encounter with a man in a church one day. He came up to her to say he had a message for Courtney. Her sister-in-law was the only Courtney she knew, and she wasn't even aware Nicola had cancer, as she told her the message he had said, "Tell the one who is sick to go to St. Rita." Her friend Anne told her about a shrine to St. Rita in St. John's Lane. When Nicola got there, she prayed for over an hour for a miracle until a priest came over and asked what she was praying for. He told her she should visit Father Moore's well. So, a well, or a holy well, as we call them in Ireland, they're like sacred places in Ireland. Usually, they're always outdoor. They're usually made up of a small pool of water and very large statues. Usually a statue of Holy Mary. And people go there to pray. And they're said to have healing powers. And most villages in Ireland would have them. Usually, they're kind of at the side of the road somewhere. I know in my own little village in Ireland, there's three that I can think of from the top of my head alone. They're kind of everywhere. And they're just usually in like a little kind of a, almost an alcove. If you can imagine like an outdoor alcove with like surrounded by trees or hedging, and usually just in a little small area. So Nicola went with her friend Mandy, and while there, she followed the instructions written there and rubbed the holy water all over the parts of her where the cancer was. They went for food at a pub where the owner told her she should visit a local healer called Matthew Lennon. There was a large line outside, and she was told the sickest people were seen first. She was surprised when right away a woman came and let her inside. Matthew looked like a regular Irish man. He lifted his hands and danced his fingers in the air around her. She was taken aback, but also felt she had nothing to lose. As he did the movement, she began to feel a sensation in her energy, like rushing water through her, and she fell backwards into the arms of his assistant. He asked her to come back on Thursday, and she did. 2 weeks later, she went to the hospital for the results of her most recent scan. She didn't want to see her doctor again, as she hadn't liked his attitude and negativity toward her that first time, so she had asked his assistant Minnie to deliver the news. Her friend Niamh, her brother Justin, and her mother were with her. Minnie told her she had read the scans 8 times and there was nothing to see. There was no cancer at all in her body. They all could not believe the news. They jumped around in joy. On the way home, she told them not to tell anyone the news, and she texted everyone to come and meet her at the apartment. She and Justin went to the shop and bought as much food and alcohol as they could. They were going to throw a party to celebrate. When everyone arrived, it took telling them several times for them to believe the good news. Once it sunk in, everyone erupted with joy and they put on some music, started dancing around. Life couldn't feel much better. Now, I don't know if you guys all believe in this kind of thing, healers and going to places like Holy Wells, and if your diet can help you. But clearly something worked here, because she was given a terminal diagnosis and then suddenly they're saying she has 0 cancer. It's pretty amazing, and I can only imagine how much joy she felt at finally having her life back. Nicola spent the following year getting back to the old her. Once she was back at work and feeling well again, she decided to download Tinder, and about a minute in, she swiped right on Paul Moody. Despite everything she had been through, this swipe would end up bringing upon her the worst time in her life. Nicola's friend Niamh received a text from a policeman she knew through her boss Carl. His name was Paul Moody and he was Carl's best friend. He told Niamh that Nicola was being investigated for unpaid taxes. Niamh immediately went into defence mode and told him that was not possible, as she had breast cancer. He told her the proof was there and she would have to give him more reason than she had had cancer. He told her to tell him everything and he would have a word with the lads doing the investigating. Niamh insisted she had been really ill and her family had had to pay her mortgage. It couldn't be possible, as Nicola was a really honest person. He then admitted he had only been messing with her, that he had met her on Tinder and wanted to ask her out. In a panic, Niamh texted Nicola to let her know what had happened and that she had revealed that she had cancer to this man who she had never met. Nicola said she would have done the same and not to worry, but she probably wouldn't be meeting him now. Niamh stressed that what he had done wasn't right, but that she had met him a few times and he was really funny and to still go on a date with him. Now, I don't know about you guys, but that to me immediately is red flag. So he swipes right on this woman, matches with her, realizes they have someone in common, texts that person pretending she's being investigated because he's a policeman, and trying to get like dirt on her before he's even met her, before they've gone on a date, before they've even really texted. Like, that's bizarre behavior to me. And also, if you're thinking this sounds a little kind of far-fetched and crazy, Ireland is that small. Like, I think so many Irish people I meet, random strangers I've never met before, don't even live in the same part of Ireland as me, and we've ended up having someone in common that we know. Like, it is very, very common because it's a very small country. But I just think this is just a very strange thing. But yeah, I don't know that I mentioned this at when I was going through that, but he is a policeman. He's a Garda, as we call them in Ireland, a Garda. So that is why he was able to say that she was being investigated for unpaid taxes. But even like to use that fact, like, oh, I'm a policeman and I know that other policemen in my department are investigating your friend, so give me all the details about her. Like, it's just, and like, he hasn't even met her yet. Oh, I don't know, that's immediate red flags for me. I would be put off 100%. Nothing to do with the fact that she'd had cancer and didn't think some guy would want to date her because of that, or that she didn't want to tell him such an intimate thing about herself. But like, that's just kind of wild. So anyways, Paul's first text with Nicola had been full of charm and all of the personality she was looking for. Again, as we know, can be major red flag. He was warm and funny and his messages excited her. but she told him after tricking Niamh, she wasn't sure she wanted to continue talking to him. He told her not to take herself so seriously, that he hadn't been expecting Niamh to tell him something so personal about her. His intention had been to find out if she was good crack or a bit of a messer. Again, these are Irish words. Good crack means like fun, like if to find out if she's good fun. A bit of a messer means like, oh, she kind of like causes trouble, but nothing like serious. You know, it's messer would be like a little troublemaker, but nothing that's going to get you jail time, basically. She thought about the fact that he had actually pressed Niamh for even more information after he had found out she had cancer. She didn't think it was funny to do that to someone. He apologised and said he would buy her dinner to make up for it. She eventually agreed to meet him as she liked how funny he was. She didn't want to give any personal information out about herself, so she told him she lived out by the airport. He lived in Selbridge, so again, Nicola lives in Dublin. Ireland, if you don't know, it's divided into counties, and Selbridge is in a different county, albeit right next to Dublin, and that is County Kildare. She was disappointed that he lived pretty far from her. He suggested they meet halfway for a coffee right then, that they should both leave their houses in 20 minutes. Nicola knew she would take longer than that to get ready. When she was running late, he called her to ask her where she was, then a few minutes later called again. She was amused at his attention. Then when she was just almost there, he told her he was only just leaving. Then he called a third time and suggested she come to his as she was already far closer than he was. She was taken aback. She told him he must have taken her for an idiot. He insisted he had only gotten delayed last minute and he would explain when she got there. She reluctantly agreed. So this, again, to me seems like it was all a ruse just to get her to his house. Like, he did not want to go to some coffee place and meet her. He had no intention from the very beginning. He's trying to find out where she is so that, you know, he can say, oh, I was delayed, that's why I was not here. Because he wants to know, like, is she there already or can I lure her to my house, basically. Paul answered his door with wet hair and an unbuttoned shirt. Like, again, red flags to me. You just met this guy. She knew right away she wasn't attracted to him. He looked nothing like his profile picture. Do they ever look like their profile pictures? I think sometimes, back when I was using dating apps, it was just like, Jesus, 10 years ago nearly. I think most of the time they looked like it. No one was ever like, ugh. I think there was definitely a couple of times where I was like, okay, you look nothing like your pictures. But yeah, I think that's always, but again, like, we're all kind of guilty of that. We're always going to use our best pictures, right? So he looked nothing like his profile picture. He looked older and she was disappointed. He brought her out to the back garden. She noticed how lovely his house was. He offered her a glass of wine, but she said no as she was driving. He insisted that she could as he was a policeman. And again, like, she said no, she's driving. She doesn't want to drink, but you're like, oh, but I'm a policeman, so it's fine. Like, I don't like that. So he poured her a glass. He was kind of funny and they got along very well. However, she still felt no attraction. Paul never finished getting ready and never explained why he'd been late. Again, because that was his intention in the first place. But she didn't notice. There was an energy between them and they talked and laughed. He said he wanted a partner who was his best friend and he wanted to be buddies with his kids also. He also said his ambition was to be a sergeant. She told him she used to want her own salon, but now she wanted a life full of love and laughter. He asked her on a date the next day to a really classy restaurant he knew. She told him it was too far and she would have to drive all the way back after. He said she could stay at his place. She firmly said no and felt a bit put off that he'd even suggested it. She'd only known him for a few hours. He then insisted she drive and get a taxi home. He seemed to have a solution for everything, but she liked that. She finally left 4 hours later. Despite telling him she wouldn't so much as kiss a guy she just met, he came to her car window and said, I can't resist, I can't, and leaned in and kissed her. He said, just in case I never see you again, I wanted to know what kissing such a beautiful woman would feel like. Ugh, that just makes me vomit, honestly. Nicola thought it was romantic and had been a good kiss. While she hadn't been attracted to him, there was something about the kiss and she thought that she would give him a chance. So she agreed to go for that dinner the next evening. When she pulled up at his house the next day, Paul whistled in approval at her outfit and told her she looked absolutely stunning. He introduced her by name to the waitress at the restaurant and she gave them a great table. He said it was the perks of being a Garda. Then the manager stopped by and said hello. Paul asked him if he'd gotten that thing sorted. He said he had and went to get them a bottle of wine. Paul said he had helped the guy out with a few things. Nicola refused to drink as she was again driving, but Paul told the waiter to give her a large glass as she was going to be getting a cab. This made her laugh and she accepted so as not to be rude. I hate, first of all, that he's like pressuring her into drink. I feel like if someone says no to drinking, just let that be a no. Drinking culture in Ireland, like, I know we have such a stereotype of being big drinkers, but there is that kind of stigma of, like, if you're someone who normally drinks, but you're on a night out and you're, for whatever reason, don't want to drink, it's, like, such a big deal. And people will try to, like, pressure you, or they'll come and be like, what? Like, we're not drinking. Like, what the hell? Like, and I've noticed that in a huge difference between here and America. Like, if you're not drinking here, no one bats an eyelid. It would be really strange for someone to do that. And I do kind of, like, it's definitely something I don't like. If someone says they don't want to drink, they don't want to drink. Like, just, it shouldn't be questioned, and you shouldn't be pressuring them or asking them even a second time, you know. Paul asked Nicola her plans for the summer, and she said she had a holiday coming up in Ibiza for her friend's wedding, which she was looking forward to. He told her if she played her cards right, he might give her a lift to the airport. He asked how many people were going, and when she told him she would be leaving in 2 weeks, he joked that he had only just met her and she was already leaving him. He tried to fill her glass again, ignoring her protests. Then he ordered cocktails. When the table near them asked what cocktails they were drinking, he also ordered them around. His generosity impressed her. She sees generosity, I see, oh, trying to look like, you know, the big man, like, I'm so nice, and look at me, like, giving these strangers drinks, and like, ugh. Oh, it's all just so familiar to me. She felt like she'd known him for years and loved feeling so desired by him. As they walked out, Nicola realised that they hadn't paid. Paul said it was okay as the manager owed him. She was impressed by this, thinking how good he was to help people so much they wanted to repay him. Now, I personally think that it's icky to call in that favour on a first date. Like, fair enough, you know when you have a date, but it's like, I'd still prefer to pay if I'm on a date. I think it just looks kind of gross and tacky. And also, was it even a favour? Because I also feel like it could be forced upon that manager, as, you know, Paul is a Garda and he knew that he wouldn't call him out on it because of his status as a Garda. But either way, it's just like, I don't know, it doesn't sit right with me. When they got to Paul's house, he pleaded with her to stay for one drink. He said he didn't want to push it, but he really liked her. So she stayed for a glass of wine. He put some music on and pulled her up to dance. Then he kissed her and she felt something in that kiss. He brought Ibiza up again, saying he would have to take her now as they dance so well together. She would have to take him now, I guess. He asked in good humour if he should be insulted that she didn't want him to meet her friends. Remember, she just met this man the day before. They relaxed on the couch, and at one point she opened her eyes to see Paul scrolling the Ryanair app on his phone. Now, Ryanair, if you don't know, is an Irish airline. So he's not stopped talking about Ibiza. He's just met her the day before. And she opens her eyes to see him on the Ryanair app looking at flights. Just think about that. As she sat up, he said, "Just streaming, don't worry. Prices are great though, and I could always meet you over there after the wedding if you wanted." She laughed along, but there was also something in the idea that appealed to her. The idea of a whirlwind romance in the sun sounded attractive. Then he said, "I could, you know, come over to Ibiza." She wanted to shut the conversation down now without hurting his feelings, and told him she wasn't really sure of the plan yet. Like, that's kind of psychotic behaviour to me. Like, you're basically begging to go on this trip with her. You just met her. That's just so weird to me. But, again, hold your judgment. There's going to be also a lot of times in this story, and I even found it, as someone who's been through this and someone who's read these stories and researched and knows, like, I've been trained on this and knows what it's like, there's a lot of times where I really honestly had to hold my judgment a little bit, because you kind of forget sometimes. And there's definitely a lot of times where you're honestly going to be wanting to, like, scream at this poor woman. But just remember the amount of power and control these people have over you almost instantly. Like, they know what to do and say to get inside your head. So Paul picked her up for dinner the next day at 5, and she saw him every night as her trip grew closer. So this is a lot for someone you literally just met, and they're seeing each other already every single day. One night as he dropped her home, he said again how he didn't want her to go away. Now she understood how he felt as she was falling for him and becoming more attracted to him. They were on the phone all day, every day. Her sister Nicola was happy for her, but told her to take care of herself as she'd been through a lot and needed to get her health and energy levels up. I just realised I said her sister Nicola, but she's Nicola. Sorry, guys. I didn't edit that as carefully as I should have. My apologies. Her sister, not Nicola. She's Nicola. Okay, we're back again. One night she arrived at his house to a note taped to the door. Nicola, just trust me, come upstairs. The lights were all off and there were rose petals on the stairs and candles at the top. Paul was standing at the top in just black pajama bottoms. She started taking steps back down the stairs. He told her not to think the worst and just to trust him. He led her to his room where there were more candles and rose petals scattered on the bed. She put her hand on the doorframe and told him she wasn't sleeping with him. He promised her he wasn't going to try anything. She saw he had gone to so much trouble, and although she wanted to run down the stairs, she also didn't want to hurt him. And girls, again, remember, you don't have to do something, even if like they went to a lot of effort, went to a lot of trouble, if it seems really romantic and sweet, but you feel uncomfortable and you don't want to be a part of whatever is going on, you don't have to do that. You can run down the stairs if you want to. It does not matter. Then he got a bottle of essential oil and said he just wanted to massage her back. Like, I just think that's really creepy. I don't know if it's just me reading this story and knowing what happens, but like, I would get major ick from that. I feel like regardless of, even if he was just like a regular guy doing this and not someone who ends up being an abusive piece of shit, like, that's major ick to me. Like, you want to massage me and we haven't even slept together? Like, oh, no, I met you like a week ago, calm down. But she agreed and tried to relax. This was supposed to be the dream, right? What romantic heroes did in novels. She found herself relaxing. He left her for a while and then told her he had drawn a bubble bath for her, surrounded with candles and full of perfumed oils. He told her he would start dinner while she enjoyed her bath. And again, like, she's going to be naked in a bath in this man's house while he's downstairs making dinner. And she's just met him, like, what, a week, 2 weeks before, maybe? Like, it's just kind of weird. I just can't like imagine. And now I'm not judging her. Absolutely not judging her. But like, I could never. I don't think I could ever. But she locked the door. So here you go. That'll tell you she's still not feeling great. She's still feeling a little uncomfortable. Again, like, always listen to your gut instincts. But she felt so grateful to be pampered like this. Downstairs, Paul told her he had fallen for her. She didn't respond, but she did feel the same. He was so thoughtful and putting so much effort in. This is the relationship she'd always dreamed about. He said he would love her to stay over, and while she was tempted, she stuck to her guns and went home. The next day, Paul showed up at her door during his work hours, saying he was in the area and indicated that he was on the phone to his friend Carl. He was saying to Carl, "Yeah, buddy, Ibiza. Meeting up there next week. Can't wait. She's an amazing girl." This confused Nicola. What was going on? He went on to tell Carl he had booked it and gotten cheap flights and told him to check the screenshot he had sent him on WhatsApp. Then he shook his head and said, "Ah, Jesus, tell her it was my idea. Nicola didn't even know I was booking them." Then Nicola's heart sank. She realised Carl was at work at his salon and that the she that Paul was referring to was her friend Niamh, who was also going to Ibiza. And remember, Niamh works for Carl, who is Paul's best friend, and Niamh is the one that he texted originally that night they swiped on each other on Tinder. Although she could hear her laughing in the background and saying the more the merrier, she knew she would have really been feeling shocked and unhappy. So she went out to the patio and called Niamh. She didn't even say hello. Nicola, what the hell? Her boss's best friend was now going to be coming on the only holiday she was taking this year. It wasn't fair. She'd wanted to relax and let her hair down. Nicola knew how professional Niamh was and wouldn't have wanted someone reporting back stories about what she was doing on her downtime. Nicola said it wasn't her idea, that she had no clue he would book it, but she would ask him not to go even though she was worried. It would ruin their connection. Then she thought maybe she herself should not go. This annoyed Niamh even more, so she reluctantly told her to let him come along as the damage was done now. Like, so this guy, again, she has just met him. They're not even officially a couple. They're just dating. He has now, without even asking her, booked himself a flight to Ibiza to a wedding for her friend with her other friends. And they haven't even met him. They don't know this man. Like, it's so crazy to me. I can't understand it. Like, I just, it's psychotic behavior to me that a person would even do that. And even thinking that, like, she's allowing it. Like, I understand it because she's, like, really into this guy. She's just been through a really, really traumatic time in her life and realized, okay, now, you know, I went to the darkest thoughts, thought I was going to die, and now I'm not. My cancer is gone. I want to live life to the fullest. Like, it makes sense to me, but, like, it's just so crazy that a person would do that. Paul had opened up to Nicola about his past, and she felt they were growing closer and closer, and she even considered he could be the one. He showed her a scar on his leg, saying his father was a milkman and he had had an accident with a forklift, caught his leg and had nearly lost it. For some reason, neither of his parents had come to visit him while he was recovering. He remained vague as to why. Nicola felt sorry for him and wished she could go back in time and take care of him while he was in hospital. Again, this all sounds so familiar to me. I had the same sob stories. Oh, I had a really bad childhood and, like, my mom was abusive and this happened to me and this happened to me and... it's just another way of, like, them kind of sucking you in and making them feel sorry for you. And her saying that she wished she could go back in time and take care of him. Like, I had that too. I felt that, like, oh, I just want to protect him now, you know. He also told her he had been an overweight teenager and felt ugly, and how a girl like her wouldn't have looked twice at him. She again felt a protective urge to love him. She believed God had sent her to him to be a good woman for him. Paul also spoke about his ex, Sharon, and how she never wanted the dream with him. She wouldn't move to his town in Selbridge, and he couldn't understand why she would want to stay in Dublin when it was so peaceful where he was and the houses were much bigger. He said she was really difficult and the relationship had almost destroyed him. He said she used to hit him, but he never once hit her back. Because he hadn't loved Sharon, she also wouldn't let him see his son. This shocked Nicola, as it was the first time he had ever mentioned being a father. He then asked if he could trust her, and when she assured him, he played her a video saying this was what Sharon had driven him to. It was dated a year before, and the video showed his face as he was wedged between the bed and the wall, sobbing uncontrollably and shaking. He was saying, "This is what I am. Look what you did to me." Nicola had never seen a man in such a state. She again wanted to go back in time and save him from that horrible woman. He said Sharon had turned his whole family against him. His brother took her side on everything because she filled his head with so many lies. He had nobody because of her. Nicola decided she would make up for all the pain he had endured. And again, like, he, with, you know, all his talk about, like, falling for her, seeing her every single night, booked himself on her trip, and he's never told her that he has a child, he has a son. Like, that's kind of wild. That's like one of the first things you would tell someone. And even like that first night they met, they were talking about their future together, and he said he wanted to be friends with his kids but never mentioned that he actually had a kid. And then, like, you know, shit talking his ex, she's the worst person in the world, she did this, that and the other to me, and she was abusive to me and turned my family against me. Like, again, major red flags. My ex did that to me too. All of his exes were awful. They were all bitches, they were all sluts, they were all abusive to him. It's just another tactic that they use to suck you in. Nicola continued to see Paul every night up until the day he drove her to the airport. She didn't want to leave him, even though he would be joining her in a few days. She worried the break would ruin everything between them. But then she caught sight of the girls gathered in an excited group inside the airport, and that was all she wanted. He had to physically wrench herself away from Paul as he kept kissing her and saying how much he was going to miss her. She then remembered how last year she had thought she would never make it to this wedding due to her illness, and she scolded herself for wanting to stay with Paul instead of going. When she landed and turned her phone back on, she had already received 6 texts from Paul asking if she had landed and how she was getting on. It felt nice to be missed. She didn't call him until she had unpacked in her room and was headed down for dinner. He said he had been going mad wondering what she was doing. He asked who else was there. She said everyone was just arriving in now. Then her friend's dad spotted her and they had a little chat. She had known this man all of her life. He joked around with her and offered her a drink and said he would catch her for a dance later. Then Paul suddenly said, right, cutting her off. He seemed distracted and she asked if he was okay. His tone continued to be very clipped as she talked about everyone and how excited she was for him to meet them. Then he said, Jesus, Nicola, stop talking shite. I don't even know these people. She felt deflated and then he hung up. She felt she had hurt his feelings, so she called him back after dinner. He told her not to worry, that it wasn't what she had said, but just that he would love to be there and he missed her. A few nights later, Nicola's roommate Anne brought a guy back to their room. It was just a friend of hers and purely platonic, but Nicola still felt embarrassed as she was in bed while they laughed and joked on the balcony. She texted Paul telling him the girl she was sharing a room with had brought a guy back. He texted her back instantly saying, get out of that room right now. You're texting me telling me there is fellas coming back to your room. Nicola told him he had it wrong, that Anne had just brought him back, but that she herself is in bed. Then he said, I'm not going to Ibiza. You can fuck off. Then seeing her awake, Anne knocked on the window and asked her to join them for a glass of wine. She ignored her and went to sleep. When she awoke, there was a text from Paul simply saying, I've landed. When she picked him up at the airport, his tone was clipped as he said hello. He told her he saw in his job all the time the dangers of women bringing men back for drinks. She felt it was his way of apologising. They went to a different hotel they had booked together and slept together for the first time. She felt the connection they had was also now felt physically and she never wanted to leave the room. He told her he loved her. She felt the same but wasn't ready to say it. After they had dinner, she took him to meet her friends. She had witnessed his charisma with strangers and with her group, he had everyone chatting and laughing and paid attention to everyone, asked questions and showed interest in them. And again, like, she knows this man 2 weeks and he's already saying he loves her. And showing this, like, charm to her friends, making everyone laugh, paying attention to everyone, like, total tactic again, the same thing all the time. The patterns in these stories will always continue to amaze me. Niamh still hadn't really said hello to Paul when he asked her if she wanted a drink. Nicola pointed out that she was pregnant. He then said, ah, she can still have one, she's on holidays. Like, what the fuck? When Nicola and Niamh said again she didn't want one, he again insisted. He disappeared and came back with a fancy and expensive looking cocktail. Nicola took a sip, but he said it was for Niamh. He was trying way too hard to please her, and knowing her as well as she did, Nicola knew leaving her alone was the best option when she was like this. I think, like, it's one of those things where, and I found this with my ex too, with one particular friend, like, they can tell who is buying their charm and who isn't. And he obviously picked out that she wasn't really falling for it. And he could just tell that. And he's like trying to go extra hard. Because narcissists can possibly understand how any single person could not be under their spell. Nicola herself had developed an intolerance to alcohol since she had cancer. She would insist to Paul she didn't want any more drinks, but he would still keep ordering her more. My ex used to do this too, but she didn't want to hurt his feelings. Her sister told her she needed to take a night off from drinking. Paul agreed when she told him, but again at dinner, when she went to use the bathroom, he had gotten a bottle of expensive wine for them. He said he had forgotten her plan and that he had only wanted to celebrate her being the best thing that had ever happened to him. He even told her he wanted to marry her after 2 weeks. She then joked about the idea of having a hen party. That is a bachelorette party to all my American friends. And he said that he would also want to come and that they would have to have a joint hen and stag being a bachelor party. She felt it was banter, but it was weird to say. I feel like, you know, she feels like, oh, he's having banter about, yeah, we're going to have a wedding. And like, I feel like it was a weird thing to say. Like, I feel like it was, no, like, I would, if we did come to that and we're having, you know, you're having a bachelorette, hen or a stag, like, I want to be there to keep an eye on you, you know. I remember that specifically from Kerry Katona's story too, when I did the episode on her. I think they had a joint hen and stag party. I think they went somewhere for the weekend. And it ended up being disaster, but it was totally a control tactic, you know. When they got back to Dublin, Nicola introduced him to her family and they all loved him. She could see they were charmed by him. Then they were all very happy for her. When she visited her sister Laura, they were buzzing with excitement, especially when thinking about how just the year before, they thought Nicola would be dead by now. Paul called several times while she was there and she told him she had a client in an hour and he would be at her place at about 11 that night. They had also exchanged keys to each other's homes at this point. On her way to her clients, Paul called again to remind her not to be late to the job. He already knew her so well to know that she was like that. He said he missed her. Nicola felt distracted at her client's appointment as her phone was constantly pinging and ringing with calls and texts from Paul. She wanted to answer. She loved talking to him all the time. But she wanted to give the client the attention she deserved. But her phone continued to ring and the client insisted she answer it as it could be something important. When she answered, he said he had been ringing her even though he knew she was with a client, but just wanted to tell her he missed her. When she checked her phone, she saw they had already been on 14 different calls that day. I don't know any couple that does that. Like, whether you're new in the relationship or not. And also, like, he knew she was on the way to a client. He knew what he was doing. He knew he was interrupting that session. And, like, that's how she makes her money. And again, it's just having that control of, like, he wants to know that she will answer the phone when he rings. Nicola's sister Courtney and her husband Ryan lived in Blackpool, and for anyone that doesn't know, Blackpool is in the UK. One weekend, her and Paul flew over to stay with them. Courtney observed that Paul was different to her usual type, but she could see why she liked him. She admitted that they had had a huge row the night before. He called her last minute to ask her to come out with Carl and his girlfriend, but she was exhausted and felt like she didn't look her best. We've all had those moments where you're just like, you're trying to dress up and go out and it's just not working. You're just not feeling yourself at all. It's so frustrating. She sometimes felt that Paul didn't understand that she had been sick and through a lot. She still felt overwhelming exhaustion sometimes to the point where she wouldn't even have energy to eat and would have to go straight to bed. What she didn't tell her sister was that Paul had accused her of faking the exhaustion to get out of meeting his friends and that he hinted that she used her cancer as an excuse. Like, that is just so gross, honestly. To be fair, I feel like, yeah, like, even if she wanted to do that, like, let her do that. The woman has been through freaking hell. But to actually accuse her and to hint that, like, oh, you're just using it as an excuse, like, so disgusting. But now Nicola felt that he said things in the heat of the moment and he'd apologise. It was fine. They had a great time out together in a bar where Courtney introduced them to her neighbours and Paul insisted the neighbours join them, buying them all around drinks. After a while, Paul started becoming sexually suggestive to Nicola, playing with the zipper on her dress and kissing the back of her neck and saying they should go back to the house. Nicola wanted to wait for her sister, but Paul stood up and grabbed her coat. Courtney said they should go back and avoided her neighbours. Paul and Nicola got into a cab by themselves and he kept kissing her passionately. She told him to stop as she was embarrassed in front of the driver. He said they should go straight to bed when they got back, but once inside, Courtney put a song on that they both loved and they danced around the kitchen. The neighbour's son and his friend ended up joining them as they got locked out of their house. It was becoming a real party. Nicola had no interest in going to bed now as she rarely saw her sister and was enjoying being with her. But Paul kept insisting she come to bed and even took her hand and pulled her towards the door. She said she wanted to stay up a bit longer. Then Courtney came over and took her hand and twirled her around. And now everyone was up dancing. One of the younger neighbours passed her a drink and told her to try it. Paul took it and told her she needed to go to bed. She again said she would go soon and tried to get him to dance with them. Like, it's so annoying. You know when you're just, like, having fun? You've been through a lot of stuff. You've been ill. You don't see your sister a whole lot. She lives in a different country. And you're just having a great night and having fun. Just, like, I think any decent man would just be happy to see you being so happy after everything. Like, it's just, oh, it's so frustrating. So he told her loudly that she looked ridiculous, that she was gee-eyed and looked like a fucking Egypt. Okay, for anyone who is not Irish, two very strong slang words. So gee-eyed is a word that you would use for someone who is basically like really, really drunk. Don't ask me to explain what it actually means. Like, I don't know what gee-eyed literally is, but I get it just from knowing the slang. And then idiot is basically like the Irish word for idiot. It's one that we use quite a lot. Gaeid, not so much. I feel like gaeid is a very Dublin slang. I could be wrong, but I feel like I mostly kind of hear it from people from Dublin. But idiot is definitely a countrywide word. And it's a great word too. I love it. excuse me. But Nicola wasn't drunk at all. She was just enjoying herself. The other young guy stepped forward and told him not to talk to her like that. You know what? I love that. Guys, we need more of that. Paul told him to mind your own business. The guy said, I've been watching you watching her. What's your problem? Nicola turned the music down and said he was her boyfriend and it was fine. Paul stormed out. He said he was out of here. She went to follow him, but Courtney stopped her. She insisted he was upset and went up to him. He was putting his things into his bag, and she also saw that he had her phone in his hand. She told him not to go, that it was a misunderstanding. Paul threw her phone on the bed, grabbed her bag from her hands, knocking her so she had to put her hand on the door frame so she wouldn't fall over. She was upset that he was so upset. He said he was out of there in the morning. She heard Courtney on the stairs insisting she come downstairs, but Nicola said she was fine and got under the covers. She was annoyed at Paul, but she wasn't going to leave him either. He started ranting that he wasn't going to tolerate disrespect, that he had swore after his ex Sharon he wouldn't put up with that sort of shit from a woman ever again. She felt lost as she wondered what she had done to disrespect him. He said he was done, and eventually Nicola fell asleep. And again, this is just like gaslighting at its finest. Like, you're twisting around to make it look like she's the one who is in the wrong, when it's like the complete and utter opposite to that. So Nicola woke up to her phone ringing and saw so many messages, she instantly knew something was wrong. She realized that Paul had sent messages from her phone to her contacts. One to her friend Alison read, "Why don't you just leave Nicola alone? She's not your fucking friend." She had responded with a series of question marks. Some of the other texts to other people read, "Fuck off and stop texting this phone." She quickly texted people that it was a prank. She saw one of the texts had gone to the son of an elderly client of hers. "Fuck off texting this phone, creep." This man arranged all his mother's appointments and payments and had been so kind to Nicola when she was sick. She was so embarrassed. Like, what a crazy thing to do. And again, like, this is something that abusers do. Like, they want to turn everybody you know against you. She shook Paul awake. It was 7 a.m. She shouted at him that he had to leave. He noticed the phone in her hand and realised what she had discovered. He told her not to ruin the weekend of her stupid fight. She told him he had made a show of her, texting people who were dear to her. She could barely speak. He apologised and said he'd been angry. She was so embarrassed. Then he told her she was the only thing stopping him from going back to his ex, Sharon. Her mouth dropped at that. He had told her Sharon had beat and abused him, cheated on him and hurt him more than anyone, so why would he use her name now? She was so disgusted with him, she didn't care if he did go back to her. She told him again to go, and this time he went downstairs as Ryan went after him, offering him a drive. She called Niamh and told her everything. She instantly told her to dump him, as he had been doing weird things from the beginning, which is very correct. Nicola also thought it was the right thing to do and even felt relieved. Then Paul started sending her photos of the B&B he had booked himself into. The place looked terrible, but she didn't care. She knew he could have booked himself into any hotel, yet that was what he had chosen. And again, just trying to be like, you know, get her to feel sorry for him. Because, like, he clearly knows here that he's kind of pushed it too far. And there's, you know, there isn't anything that he can do. So what he does is, like, gets her to kind of feel sorry for him and kind of twisting it around on her, like, oh, look what you've done, and you've made me book into this really shitty little B&B. Like, oh, get over yourself. Also, like, book a Ryanair flight back home to Dublin, probably cost you a tenner. Like, it's not that serious, you know. It's literally an hour away. Then Nicola started getting texts from Carl. "Nicola, can you call Paul, please? He's in bits. You can't strand someone in another country like this." And again, like, strand him in another country? It's not like he's in freaking, like, you know, a different continent or something, or even anywhere else in Europe. Like, the UK is literally right next to Ireland. Like, it'll take him an hour to go home. Relax. Then he started calling her non-stop until she picked up. This was a man she had met briefly only one time before. He told her she was being really hard on Paul for no reason, that she couldn't throw someone out into the street in a different country, and that his B&B was a shithole. Like, oh my God, what a baby. Like, getting your friends to call your girlfriend for you because you've had a fight. Like, Jesus Christ. Then Ryan and Courtney started saying she should talk to Paul, that Ryan felt sorry for him, and that they all had a few drinks. He said men self-sabotage when they feel like they aren't good enough. Like, shut up. Her sister said maybe he had a point. So they went to find him, and Nicola agreed that the place was a real dive with stains everywhere and a musty smell. She told him he should just go home today, and she didn't even want to talk to him. Well, good for her for sending him home and not just being like, oh, come back again to the sister's place. He apologised again, but she felt disgusted by him. She kept asking why he had done all of that, that she hadn't done anything to warrant that behaviour. Then he said after the drinks he couldn't get over what she'd done in the taxi. That she had let the driver see her underwear in the rearview mirror when she had spread her legs to show him. Like, come on. Do you know any girl that's going to do that? Come on. Nicola knew she hadn't. She wasn't that kind of person, but she also knew it would have been impossible with the tight pencil skirt she had on. He kept insisting that she had done it. When he realised she wasn't buying his lies, he again started begging her to let him come home, to come back to Courtney's, because he also wanted to apologise to her. She was so exhausted she agreed. He was quiet as a mouse the rest of the trip. On the way home, she kept thinking about the fact that she didn't want to be with this man at all. After the fight, Paul became clingier than ever. It was impossible for Nicola to get a night by herself. He constantly called, asking if she needed anything, and would turn up with gifts every day. See, now he knows that he's fucked up, so he's turning on that, like, love bombing again, you know? She would come home and find him in her apartment with a glass of wine, a bath run, and a dinner made. But a breakup was in the air, and they both felt it. She was really missing her time for herself, plus the doctor had told her she needed to be stress-free and she wanted to not drink alcohol every night. She needed to recharge after long days in the salon talking non-stop to people. When she would try to get space, Paul would have a solution to every excuse. When she said she had a headache, he would say he'd come over with pills. When she would say she was going straight to bed, he would say he'd be over to run her a bath. But then he would always spend the night, so like he knew what he was doing. Another thing was bothering her since Blackpool. Niamh wasn't really speaking to her. She would never admit it, but she could feel there was something wrong between them. She thought Niamh was probably irritated that she was still with Paul after she had told her she needed to dump him. But to Nicola, it wasn't that simple. He was an amazing and caring man, and she wanted to give him another chance. She just needed space to work it out, and Paul wasn't giving her any. He asked if Niamh wasn't speaking to her, that she hadn't been meeting up with her as usual. She told him she was a bit off with her over what had happened to Blackpool. He said he would call to her at the salon to chat about it. She told him not to, that she was having dinner with Sonny the next evening and would talk to her about it. Like, I mean, the fact that he's trying to come in and be like, oh, I'll fix things with your friend. Like, oh, just get away from me. As she got ready the next day, Paul dropped by. He again said he had no problem dropping her to dinner and picking her up after. She said she didn't know what time she would be leaving, but he still insisted he would drop by later. Nicola felt a weight lift from her shoulders when she saw Sonia. Her phone rang not long later, and of course it was Paul. She put him on speaker as she usually did. He told them to have a good catch-up and to call when she was done. Sonia mentioned not liking speakerphone after she had hung up, and Nicola said that Paul always insisted on it. He even did it himself when he was on a call in front of her. I think that, though, is wanting to know who she's with, like confirmation of who's there in the room with her and what she's doing, in case like she's lying to him or anything. Sonia asked how everything was after the incident in Blackpool. Nicola said it was all good, and when Sonia insisted she knew it wasn't, Nicola turned it into a joke, saying she was getting no sleep and exaggerating a wink. As Sonia had never met Paul before, Nicola desperately wanted her on his side. However, she did open up about how he wasn't giving her any space since they had returned, how she thought he felt if he gave her a minute to think about things, she would dump him. Exactly that. She listed everything from the constant ringing her all day long and how she barely got any sleep, like he was looking for proof that she wanted to be with him. She couldn't even take a full shower without him walking in. She dreamed of her days alone, but she had the whole evening ahead of her to do as she pleased. She had no time to recharge anymore. Like, every single person needs that recharge time. Like, I'm someone who loves being myself and honestly could be by myself all day, every day. But, like, every single person, if you're someone who doesn't necessarily like being alone, we all need that downtime to just do those little things that you like to do yourself, to just be at home and just look like shit and like no makeup and like your crappy comfortable clothes and, you know, do your thing and like not even been able to take a shower without someone walking in. Like, I would literally lose my freaking mind. Sonia wondered where the girl she knew was, who would have told him straight that she needed a night to herself. Nicholas said it felt like she was hurting him when she told him her excuses, but she knew she needed him in her life, just not to be her whole life. When she got home later that night, Paul was sitting in his car outside. She told him how Neve's baby shower was coming up and he asked if they were both invited, but she said it was a girl's thing. He then asked if she was still giving her the cold shoulder over the incident at Blackpool. He tried to call Neve later to sort it out, but she didn't answer. He was determined to get back in her good graces. He helped Nicola get all the things she needed for the shower and even bought champagne, insisting to her that she tell Neve it was him who had done it. The minute she got to the baby shower and they saw each other, everything was good again. They spent the whole day laughing. Later, her sister Natalie suggested they should head to another bar. Laura suggested they go back to hers instead. They all agreed, and Nicola said that she would stay a while before heading home to watch a movie and chill out. But when they got there, her stomach dropped to hear Paul's voice as she walked through the door. He was at the table with Laura, Laura's husband Darren. He didn't even say hello, just asked if Neve was with them. She knew he had been drinking. He asked if she had told Neve that he had upgraded the Prosecco to champagne. She lied and said she had, when she in fact hadn't thought about him all day. He finally met Sonia and she listened to their conversation. Sonia was saying she could see how much they loved each other, but that he had to share her. Suddenly, he was squaring up to her. His face turned red. "What the fuck? Who are you?" he said. Sonia raised her palms and tried to back down. He said, "Mind your own fucking business, do you hear me?" snarling at her. Sonia looked at Nicola in shock. She shouted at him to stop. Then he turned on her. "Did you tell this bitch that I was suffocating you?" Sonia said she hadn't said that and had only been joking around. He shouted that he had nearly bought her an engagement ring that morning. He grabbed the keys to her car, where she had left them on the counter. She hoped he was lying about the engagement ring. That was crazy. He said, "Do you know what, Nicola? You can go fuck yourself." And he left the house, banging the front door as he went. She went after him to get her car keys, but he was already driving away. She told everyone there it was just the drink and she would let him cool off by staying where she was. She ignored Paul as her phone eventually started ringing and just had fun with her sisters, ignoring the embarrassment he had again caused her. She decided he just couldn't handle his alcohol. He was a loose cannon. Like, I remember that so well. Like, in the beginning when I was kind of first realizing, like, what the hell is wrong with this guy? Like, he just won't leave me alone. He's, like, constantly, like, something wrong. Why is he berating me all the time? And I would constantly just blame, oh, it's because of the alcohol doesn't suit him, he's drinking too much, yada, yada, yada. And, oh, I've been there. So then the texts started coming in from Paul to Nicola. "You're an ungrateful pig. If you don't answer your phone, you'll know all about it. I'm telling you, answer your fucking phone." She showed them to Laura, who silenced her phone and put it face down. She already had 27 missed calls and 17 texts. Then Laura's phone started going off. Her face blanched when she looked at it. She showed it to Nicola. "Tell your sister to ring me right now or I'll smash up the place." She rolled her eyes and said he wasn't going to do anything. He was just drunk. They decided to go to sleep. She woke early to Laura shaking her. She held up her phone and asked, "Is that you, Nicola?" She was looking at a photo, but she couldn't make out what it was. Then she realised it was a woman from behind, wrapped in a towel, bent over with everything on show. And she realised it was a picture of herself in her apartment drying off after a shower. The photo had been taken through the door. Her heart raced. He had sent the text the night before and that he was going to post it online. She checked her accounts immediately, but thankfully nothing was there. She panicked as she thought about what he would do with a photo like that of her. Then Nicola gasped as she noticed more texts on her phone. There were photos of Nicola's apartment with smashed plates and cups, the TV pulled off the wall, her rugs thrown across the room, every picture on her wall was punched and smashed. She got dressed quickly and had Laura take her home. Like, that's so disgusting to think about. Like, you're just in the privacy of your own home and your partner is taking sneaky pictures of you naked through the door in order to be able to use them against you later. Like, I cannot think of anything more disgusting than that. Her car was parked outside with the lights on and all the windows open. Inside the apartment, Paul seemed to be cleaning up the mess he had caused. Her place was emptied and looked like it was ready to be rented. There were marks all over the walls, her TV was gone, her rug was gone, her pictures were missing from the walls. Even her clothes horse was missing. She told him to get out of her house. He said Carl was going to lend him money to pay for the damages. She wondered at the lie, as the day before he had claimed he had been about to buy a ring and now he had to borrow money. She'd worked so hard to have her own place and had bought every little thing inside of it. Like, I kind of had a similar thing, not so bad, but like, my ex used to literally like throw my things, and always my things, around the apartment. And like, it's just the disrespect of it. Like, I'm someone who really respects like my own items that I own. Even like things that are insignificant don't mean anything. It's like, I got it from somewhere, it's sentimental, or I paid for it, or like, I just like it, it's in my part, it's mine. And when someone else disrespects that, like, it's just the most horrible feeling. I remember, like, on the last day when, you know, I left my ex, and I remember, like, one of the things that caused me to, like, kind of lose my mind that day was him. I had, like, against one wall, a stack of my shoe boxes with shoes on top of them and shoes inside of them, and him just, like, flipping the whole thing. And I just remember, like, I was already kind of, like, you know, this is it now, like, I'm at the point where I've completely lost the plot, and like, that just really tipped me over the edge. It's just like a horrible feeling. So she told Paul to replace everything, and then she got her keys and drove out to the seafront. Her phone kept pinging off in her bag. "I'll get anger management. I love you, Nicola, and I'm so sorry," but she didn't care. Then he said he had a broken his arm. "I have to go to A&E A&E is like the emergency room. It's like, stands for accident and emergency, for anyone that doesn't know. "I'm getting anger management, Nicola. I know what I did was terrible. Can you come and collect me from A&E? He must be insane," she thought. "No," she texts back. She swore Laura to secrecy. She didn't want her brothers finding out and doing something stupid when Paul was a Garda. He continued to text her. "Nicola, please don't let this go. Don't give up on me. Nicola, my arm is broken. Please come. I need you to come. I'm sitting here with my own thoughts. Please just answer me. Please, Nicola, just let me talk to you. I'm sitting here in my house with a broken arm. I'll call down to Sonia and apologise, but please just talk to me. Please just give me 5 minutes. He then sent her a picture of his arm in a cast. "Is this not enough? Is this not punishment enough?" I mean, like, he did it himself. He did it to himself. And he's trying to turn the blame around to her and say that she doesn't care about him. I mean, Jesus fucking Christ. Oh, it's so frustrating. He sent her screenshots of bookings with anger management clinics, emails to his therapist, the antidepressant prescription from the doctor in the hospital saying, "Nicola, please just let me apologise face to face and I'll leave you alone, please." Like, yeah, right, as if he was ever going to fucking leave her alone. But he just couldn't hear no. Days turned into 3 weeks of constant begging and pleading, texting and calling nonstop and showing up at her door every day. But she told him it was over. He asked her to come to his therapist with him. She said no, but at dinner that night, she thought about doing it. Could this therapist get him to listen to her? So she texted him that she would go. The therapist was a nice man who Paul had been seeing for years. Paul was at his table with his head in his hands. He poured his heart out, saying he should never have left counselling. He'd been too confident in himself. He talked about what he wanted for their future together and went on and on until the therapist put his hand up to stop him. He said it was now his turn to listen carefully to Nicola. But he started interrupting. He again stopped him and asked if he was going to listen to her. Nicola spoke clearly. She wanted Paul to leave her alone. Paul did a big, exaggerated nod when the therapist asked if he had heard her. He said, "Well, she can't have that. I can't do that." Nicola said this was ridiculous and left. Paul followed her out, blocking her car door. He wanted her to come back next week so they could work through it. Then she saw a flash across his face, a dark expression where his eyes narrowed and his lips pursed. It was a look of bad intentions, just for a second. Like, I understand that look so well. It's like he was putting on the face for the therapist and, like, being, you know, "Oh, I'm so lost and, like, I need help and all of this." And then, like, knows exactly what he's doing. As soon as he has Nicola alone, he has that look. Like, he knows. He's choosing his words carefully. He knows exactly what he's doing. Then he said what they had was so good, he admitted he had messed up, but why couldn't she? Then her phone kept ringing and she saw a message from Sonia saying that her father had passed away. The lovely man she had known since she was a girl had died of a heart attack. She pushed past Paul and drove straight to the hospital. Paul texted her asking when the funeral was. She told him, "Do not come to this funeral," in all caps. A few days later, as she walked out of the cemetery with Sonia, she said, "Look who's here." Paul was standing at the gate. Sonia said to her that life was short. But this was not okay with Nicola. He shouldn't be here. He had no right. And she wanted him nowhere near Sonia after how he had treated her. Like, the absolute audacity to show up at the funeral of the father of a woman who you spoke to so disgustingly. Her best friend told you not to come. And you're still going to show, like, at a funeral, you're trying to get this girl back. Disgusting. So she walked ahead to cut him off as he came to greet them. She said he had to go. He said he wanted to say sorry to Sonia. Like, come on, at her father's funeral. Oh. Nicholas said it wasn't the time and he needed to leave. But then several people came from behind her to greet him. And without hesitation, he had jumped back into his charming self. See, they can switch it on and on so fast. Off and on, I mean. He put his good arm around her and helped her into her coat. She shrugged him off and hissed at him to go, catching up with Sonia and staying with her all evening. At the end of the night, she went outside to see him sitting in his car. Like, Jesus Christ. Like, this is stalking. It's, oh my God, it's insanity. He said, "Just let me take you home. You're devastated too, Nicola. My heart is breaking for you." Being so worn out from everything, she let him hug her. She needed it. He then drove her in silence to her apartment. As he dropped her off, he made no attempt to come in, but said he would do anything to fix this. Afterwards, she thought maybe Sonia was right when she said life was short. When she woke up, Paul had sent her a picture of herself and him in Ibiza. "You look beautiful in this pic." Those were the days. Those were the days, like, it was only a few months ago. She remembered how joyful she had been. She didn't respond, and shortly after, he sent another picture of the two of them with big smiles. "I miss you, Nicola. Will we give it another shot? I've been in anger management. I want to work this out. While we have it so good, you can't let this go over one stupid fight. We could get back on track." He kept on sending pictures of them together. "We can make it," he said. But she knew his style of fighting wasn't normal. Trashing her home was violent and she couldn't accept that. He showed up at her door a week later, asking her to let him in. "Don't you think I've been punished enough, Nicola? I'm not working because of my arm. I'm at home all day, thinking non-stop about what I did. I'm back in therapy and I'm going to anger management as well. What more can I do?" She told him she would think about it just so he would leave. He asked to come to her birthday. Laura was horrified when she told her, "You can't let him come. It'll be Niamh's first night since having Hayley, her baby." She agreed, but also said she felt like he was doing everything he could and she felt bad because it was for nothing. Laura said she had nothing to feel bad about. Paul had started sending Nicola sound bites from his anger management sessions. She rolled her eyes as she listened, knowing it was all performative as he knew he was recording. Exactly. "Nicola is the best thing to ever happen to me. I've never loved anyone this much. I put her on a pedestal. I know she's too good for me. When I do something wrong, she has that over me. I can see it. She's really beautiful. I know we're great together, but Nicola has all these rules and impossible standards. I can never make a mistake. I need her to help me figure this out. I'm a wreck without her. Nothing is enough. When we're away from all her family and those friends, it's just so different. We click so well when it's just us two." The therapist asks if he believes there is an external influence, and he responds, "Sometimes I do. Nicola was sick, and I get it, they're just being overprotective, but she needs to be her own woman and make her own decisions, and I know deep down she wants to work this out." She asked him to stop sending them, and he responded, "Nick, I'm doing all this work and you won't even listen. I need you to help me, even if we aren't together. Can you even just help me as a friend and listen?" She always tried to be a good person, and so she listened. The messages went on and on. She was barely able to sleep, waking up all night with more messages and voice notes. She even asked herself if he was right, and maybe this was equally her responsibility. But she also knew it was too much. She could never accept his behaviour. Nicola went for a drink in Niamh's local bar. She still hadn't told her fully what had been going on with Paul. She left her car there and they took a cab into town to meet Sonia for drinks and dinner. Herself and Sonia then told Niamh about the argument that had happened at Sonia's, but she still held back on telling them both about her smashed up apartment. Niamh was extremely angry, saying it was the craziest thing she had ever heard. She told her she was finished with him now and she thought he had finally gotten the message. But as soon as the words were out of her mouth, Niamh cursed, and following her eyeline, Nicola saw Paul walking through the door. How did he know they were there? He seemed to ignore them at first, but then he came over with three cocktails saying happy birthday to Niamh. She didn't acknowledge him. He asked how the baby was, and still she continued to ignore him. I love this girl. He continued to say hello to the others, but they all ignored him until Niamh piped up, saying he needed to realise that Nicola was her own person and wasn't going to change for anyone. A look came over Paul's face. Nicola didn't want anything to happen to Niamh, so she quickly told him they were leaving. He followed her out, grabbing her purse out of her hand. She let him take it and continued to leave. Enough was enough. He shouted after her, "Even Niamh sees it, the way you treat everyone. Your way or the highway. Even your so-called best friend Niamh just said it in there. She said you will never change your ways." Like, see how he's trying to switch it around and gaslight her and try to turn her against Niamh? She asked if he thought the way he behaved was normal. He responded, "I go to anger management and my counsellor says it's normal to overreact to psychological abuse. He said there is nothing wrong with me." Nicola found that hard to believe. Then she asked him to give one example of her abusing him. He stood there silently. She crossed the street to get a cab and he shouted, "You think you're so sexy, but you look like an idiot." There's that word again. On the cab ride home, she thought about how he couldn't give her one example of her abusing him, but she had a list at arm's length. She thought about how much she had always felt from her friends, about how Paul's family avoided him, his ex hated him and wouldn't give him access to his child, his friends only ever seeming to do favours for favours. She knew the trouble between them was his fault alone. He continued to text her and then she saw a few Facebook notifications, even though she never used the app. She opened them and saw her profile picture had been changed to a picture of her and Paul, and her relationship status read that she was in a relationship with Paul Moody. Underneath the post, people were congratulating them. He had clearly hacked her page. Then she opened his texts. "Nasty, ungrateful cunt. Lucky I don't fuck 10 women tonight. Fucking Miss Perfect, you can go fuck off. Just go fuck yourself and your fucking friends. Do your friends know the shit you say about them? Does Niamh know what you said about her to me?" He also sent her screenshots of conversations he was having with their mutual friends where he told them all of the bad things she had done to him. "You're too good to her, Paul," said one of the replies. "Do your worst," she thought. She went straight to bed and turned off her phone. She knew now that she was done. She prayed he could be happy and get the help she needed, but she never wanted to see him again. She took a cab to Niamh's the next day to pick up her car, and when she got there, Paul was standing in her car with the boot slash trunk open, rifling through it. She told the driver to drop her further up the road, where she watched until he was gone. She then ran to her car and locked the doors. Suddenly he was standing behind her car. He banged so hard on her window, she screamed with the fright and beeped the horn as hard as she could before driving away. He stormed after her with a mocking smile as she realised there was a barrier in the car park and she hadn't paid. Then his face changed to anger and intention. "Open the door, you fucking bitch," he said, hammering on the window, leaving marks on the glass. She hit the horn again and joined the queue to exit. When the car in front of her went through the barrier, she sped up and followed before the barrier came down. She saw Paul run to his own car and knew he was coming after her. Like, imagine how terrifying that is. As a Garda, she knew car chases were a walk in the park for Paul. She headed toward the dual carriageway towards Kildare. He followed her, appearing on her right and swerving, forcing her down a ramp and off the main road. She shouted and sobbed at him to stop. He stayed abreast of her, pushing her off the road. She suddenly pressed the brakes, forcing him to overtake her. Then he jammed his brakes and she had to hit hers again to avoid hitting him. She held the wheel tightly as he forced her around the roundabout and back towards Lucan. He was going to make her crash. Then she saw a ramp leading to the M50 and there was a little car on the lane outside them closer to Paul's side. If she swerved last minute, he would be forced to continue on. It worked. She was finally away from him. She opened her window all the way home to breathe fresh air as she cried her eyes out. She vomited as soon as she got in the door. She guessed it was from the shock, but then something dawned on her. She hadn't gotten her period. Laura held up two positive pregnancy tests as Nicola roared crying. She dreamed of a family with Paul in the beginning, but now it was like a death sentence. She couldn't have his baby. But Laura said it was her baby and a miracle baby. And she wanted to be a mother, It wasn't the baby's fault whose father it was. Laura texts her again later, saying it was a little miracle with an angel emoji that looked like a baby. Later that day, she got a text from Paul. Are you pregnant? How would he know? She wondered if there was a bug in her apartment. She told him no, and he responded, you fucking are so. Then she said she had had a miscarriage and instantly regretted it. She knew she was lucky and whispered an apology to the baby. She needed time and Paul would never give her that. Niamh stopped by saying Paul had been texting her all day today and the day before. The texts were full of threats and insults. Tell Nicola to answer her fucking phone. You think your mother fucking Teresa. Niamh told her to stay away from him. Then she told her she was pregnant and burst into tears. The next morning, she woke to a voice note from Paul. Hey, I couldn't sleep thinking of the baby. I feel so sad that this unnecessary stress could have killed it. Then another said, I'm going to call over. She called him right away, telling him not to come over to her. He said she shouldn't be on her own after losing a baby. She told him then that she hadn't lost it. He sounded delighted, but still said he was going to come over. About an hour later, he opened the door with his own key, holding a huge rabbit plushie, a bunch of flowers and a bottle of champagne, giving her an unwelcome kiss on the cheek. Then he went to the kitchen. He was in character again, acting as if nothing had happened. He said he bought pregnancy tests and wanted her to take them. She took them with the door open and Paul watching as if she was in prison. He was beaming as they all came in positive. He kept touching her stomach. She told him to hold his horses as she hadn't made her decision yet and would have to see her doctor. Then he went to say something but stopped. She knew it was about to be something nasty. He asked what it had to do with her having cancer. She said she was in remission less than a year and wasn't out of the woods yet. He asked again what the baby had to do with that. She said her breast cancer had been caused by her hormones. She had already explained this before and how she may not be able to have kids. An increase in female hormones could bring the cancer back. He narrowed his eyes before snapping his head up, looking at her dead on, saying, "You're not killing my child." His tone was sharp and authoritarian. She reeled back. How foolish she had been to even try speaking to him about it. She thought being pregnant may have made him want to take care of her finally. She thought he would finally back off. She thought he would understand and respect her having to think about it. She told him she would make her own decisions about her own health. He said, "You're not getting rid of it. I'll be coming to the appointment so you can let me know when it is." Then he took the pregnancy test and left. Like, why are you taking the pregnancy test with you? Oh, it's so gross. She later left him a voice note saying she wanted to go by herself. He responded saying, "Sorry, but I don't trust you to tell me what he says. I want to be there." "Paul, I could get the cancer back. Do you realise that?" she responded. "Yes, I do, but you're not killing my child. You'll have the baby and you'll be moving down to Selbridge." So, like, he clearly is, firstly, not concerned about the fact that it's very likely she could get her cancer back. But also the fact that, like, he really doesn't care about this child. To him, this child is like, oh, now I'm always going to be in her life. Now she can never leave me. Now I'm always going to have control over her, you know? He continued to bombard her with his terms and conditions, and somehow, even though she hadn't told him when it was, he turned up at the hospital for her appointment. He continued to threaten her in the waiting room. He said she wasn't going to kill the baby. He didn't give a fuck what the doctor would say. He said he had the pregnancy tests and he would post them to Facebook. When the doctor called her in, she told Paul to wait there, but he followed her in anyway. Like, can you imagine that? Like, you know, if she decided to not keep this baby, and then he's going to shame her by posting the pregnancy tests and then saying that she had an abortion. Like, it's just so sick. The doctor told her any risks from the pregnancy itself would be outweighed, but the stress and upset of a termination, given all of her earlier worries that she could never have a baby. I found this so strange from a doctor. Like, you're going to say that all of the risks, any of the risks that she would have had from this pregnancy about getting her cancer back, would be outweighed by the stress and upset she would have if she had a termination. Like, is that accurate? Or is it even okay to tell a patient? Because I really don't think so. Paul looked at her with victory in his eyes, but she'd already felt a floodgate of joy inside herself. She already felt love for this baby. When they left the apartment, Paul again said she would be moving to Selbridge, even though she told him she wanted to live in her own apartment. Then he said he would move in with her. She felt very strong as she turned to him and said no. He grabbed her car door, saying he was the child's father and legal guardian and had the right to go to the hospital appointments. Nicola didn't know if that were true or not. The truth is, it is not a legal right. They have to have the mother's consent because the mother is the patient. So it's not true to say that, like, he has the legal right to go there. She told him to give her some space to get her head around the pregnancy. On the way home, her phone continued to ring and voice notes beeped through. "We're a family now, Nicola. You can't be selfish anymore. You have to give up the games now. The baby comes first. It's not about you. It's about the baby now." Then she received a text from her sister, Natalie. "Paul just texted me the news. Congratulations." Like, can you imagine that? He's, like, texting her sister to tell her that she's pregnant. Didn't even give her a chance to tell her own family that she's pregnant. But then it's also a way of controlling her and being like, oh, now you can't get rid of it because I'm telling everybody that you're pregnant. He clearly had no boundaries and now felt this pregnancy gave him ownership over her. She had her brother change the locks on her apartment. Niamh had been telling some of her co-workers about Nicola and Paul's situation, which was overheard by Carl, who of course told Paul. She then received a tirade of abusive messages from him. "You stay out of Nicola's life or else. Do not come near me or my family again. Stay out of it." Then he sent her her home address with the text, "Watch your child." So can you imagine that? He's like sending her own home address. And this is Nicola's friend, Niamh, if that wasn't made clear. And then saying to watch her child, her like new baby that she just had. Sick. So sick. Niamh hadn't been sleeping the last few nights with the worry. She told Carl, who rang Paul's boss. He said he would have a chat with him, but the next day he called back and said that Paul seemed fine and he'd no concerns about him. Oh, makes me so angry. Paul had sent Nicola a voice recording of herself where it sounded like he had chopped up conversations they had had to make it sound like she was a bad person, impatient, cruel, like basically just editing other things she had said to make up his own narrative. Paul's voice came in at the end saying he had played that for Carl, who was disgusted at her. Nicola couldn't take it anymore and her sister Courtney said she would come over from Blackpool to talk to him. They met Paul outside a cafe where he came rushing over to kiss Courtney hello, putting his arm around her, again putting on his performance. She rolled her eyes. Courtney said she was here to support his sister and wanted it to be a calm conversation. She made him turn off his phone so he couldn't record it. Nicola pleaded with him about his behaviour and dragging other people into his problems. She wanted to get along with him so they could co-parent their child in a healthy environment. She held his hands as she pleaded. She thought she saw a look in his face and that maybe her words were sinking in until he threw her hands back at her. "You are the fucking problem, Nicola, not me." And I remember that feeling so well of just like pleading and pleading and pleading with this person to just try to understand you. But the truth is, like, they're not really listening to your words. They don't care and they never will care. Like, they don't have those same thought processes as the rest of us. She told Sonia and Niamh all about it a few days later in a restaurant. Her phone was continually buzzing in her bag with calls from Paul. It got so annoying that Niamh told her to turn it off. When she picked it up, she saw she had notifications of photos received from Paul. There was picture after picture of naked women and dick pics. Then she saw pictures of herself naked, clearly taken when she was completely unaware. Some while she was asleep from behind as she changed. Then she noticed the same kind of photo, but of Paul's ex. Then the text came in. "If you don't answer your fucking phone, you will know all about it." Then he started calling again. She couldn't take it anymore and went home to bed. She woke later on with her heart pounding, wakened by a noise. Then she heard a knock on her bedroom window. She saw a shadow move to the other side, the unmistakable shape of Paul. It moved back and forth and she realised he was trying to see through the crack in the blind. He called her name in a whining, high-pitched voice. It made her blood run cold. He banged so hard the window shook. She thought if she lay still long enough, he would leave. Then she saw a light and realised he was raising his phone to his ear. She grabbed her phone and buried it under the pillow, knowing he was calling her and the light would make her room brighter. "I know you're home, you stupid bitch," he snarled. His eye was pressed to the gap. He kept thumping the window, roaring at her to open the fucking door. Then she heard a loud crack and wondered about calling the police. Everything went quiet and she was terrified she would hear footsteps inside. Eventually, there was no more noise and she fell asleep, exhausted. She woke the next morning and saw her window had been smashed. She immediately called the station where he worked, lying about her name and saying it was Mandy. 10 minutes later, the station number flashed on her screen, but it was Paul at the other end. "Hello there, Mandy, is it? What the fuck do you want with my sergeant?" She accused him of breaking her window, but he said he had been nowhere near her place. He called her a fool for ringing the guards on him. He laughed at her. She called Courtney and told her what happened in floods of tears. She told her to make the report at another station, so she did. They came and took a statement from her, photographed the window. She didn't hear from Paul for a whole week afterwards. Niamh heard from Carl that he'd gone to Tenerife and wasn't coming back. Carl was worried and had even rang his boss. A few days later, Nicola got a call from an unknown number, and of course, it was Paul. He said he had a breakdown and had checked into PETA House. So this is an Irish organisation who help people under distress, people having suicidal thoughts, self-harming, or, you know, people who are themselves affected by suicide. He said he needed to see that he was, she needed to see that he was on medication. He asked about the baby and if he could come to her checkups. Thinking of the baby, she gave him the details of her upcoming appointment. He came to every appointment and was on his best behavior. It was nice to have someone share the excitement with her, and she found herself taking his calls when he checked in. So again, like, he realizes, oh fuck, she's called my boss and me. Now I'm in trouble with the guards. And, you know, it's not a good look. And he feels her slipping away. And he's trying again, like, now I'm going to be Mr. Nice Guy again to reel her back in. One day as he was helping her into the car, he said he loved her and was so sorry about everything. He said things would be okay. And she agreed if they continued the way they were going, they could co-parent easily together. So she's still not thinking about getting back together with him. She's just like, she just wants an easy life. She just wants to be able to co-parent with her baby, happy, relaxed, him have his time with the baby, her have her time, and they can make their arrangements and all that. Basically what everybody would want. So heavy snow fell one day and the city came to a standstill. So Ireland, if you don't know, doesn't really have the infrastructure to deal with snow, as it is such a rare occurrence. So usually everything halts until the snow clears. Nicola was stuck, especially being so pregnant. She couldn't risk a fall, so Paul said he would bring some groceries over. Thankfully, he didn't try to come in, and she felt like she'd finally gotten through to him. Another day, he came around with groceries. She happened to be on the phone, telling Isabel how tired she was feeling and how much her back hurt when she had a thought. She put her hand to her breast and felt a lump. She ran to a mirror to check herself and gasped with wonder at how she hadn't noticed it until now. She broke down in Paul's arms while he said they would sort it all out. She felt grateful he was there. They went to church together and prayed. The following morning, Paul brought her to see her oncologist. Her cancer was back. Dr. Brady told her chemo had risks during pregnancy, but as her baby was due in June, they could start treatments then and she could continue her natural treatments that she had done the first time around. Her family gathered around her and made a plan, as before, to help her out with making her juices. Paul came around to learn how to do everything, but he eventually told her her family had enough on their plates and he could easily move in with her and take over, happily sleeping on the couch. She felt he was right. It was his baby she was carrying, so it felt only right that he should share the work instead of her family. He'd been great to her recently and she wanted him at her side, so he moved in while he told her it was all on her terms. And again, like, you can see how he easily manipulates her here, saying like, oh, that's a lot of work for your family to be doing, and like, this is my family now, we're having a kid together, so let me do it, I'll move in, it'll all be on your terms, I'll sleep on the couch, yada yada yada. Just disgusting.